Hi, everyone. My name is Josh Nason, and this is Josh Nason's Punch-Out here on WrestlingObserver.com. Just two episodes left in the Pro Wrestling Year in Review series. We have a stop today in November. Rejoin the show, Rich Kraich of Voices of Wrestling. Rich and I go about an hour and a half, give or take, on everything that happened in the month of November. And yes, even though it was just last month, still a lot of news to get through and a lot of talking points as well, including WWE Survivor Series, which saw CM Punk join the OG Bloodline team. What's the favor that he's going to call in for Paul Heyman? We discuss all that and more on the show. Of course, Crown Jewel happened, massive title belts, massive rings, all the good stuff. We also chat about AEW in Full Gear. We also talk about really the month of Ricky Starks. Yes, Ricky Starks, a big month in AEW and GCW. We chat all about that situation. And of course, the best of Japan, TNA, NXT, the junk drawer, all types of fun little side conversations and everything throughout this month. I think you're really going to enjoy this. So join me and Rich for a look at the month of November 2024 in the year of pro wrestling. Enjoy. Sad news, the year in review series almost done. Find ourselves in November. And it's a 12-part odyssey comes to an end. And rejoining me, I'm glad we're able to make this happen. Busy guy, Voices of Wrestling's Rich Kraich, returning for the, I think, third year. I think I've been part of every single year I've done this series. So glad to have you back. And yeah, we're recording this, I'd say, just hours after World's End ended. But it happened last night. So recovering on a Sunday morning, and it's great to talk to you again.
Yeah, glad to be here. I got a little nervous that the month had gone through. You know, December had gotten kind of late, and I'm like, oh man, I'm off the list. I didn't get the invite. What did I do? You know, and then we're back. But we're back, and I'm here again. Yeah, it's been a blast. It's a great part of the series you do. It's I love listening back to it too, because so much happens in a wrestling year, and especially with today's wrestling world, which seems like the news cycle is so fast and moves so quickly. With these things, it's great to look back and go, oh yeah, right, that happened. Oh yeah, that happened. Because, you know, when these years end now, I don't know about you, but I'm just like so much has happened. Like, how do you recap? If you try to do like one show where you recap the entire year, I don't know how you'd be able to do that. You know what I mean? It'd be like, yeah, things would be left off. So this idea that you have of going month by month, it helps me too. It helps me remember what the hell just happened in this wrestling year and actually get back and think about stuff that I hadn't thought about and maybe would not have thought about had I not listened to your show and said, oh yeah, back in April, you know, this happened. Oh yeah, back in June, you know, there's so much stuff packed in every single month here in today's insane wrestling world.
That's why, you know, so many year in review series or year in review episodes, or even just, you know, mentions during a podcast, you know, at the end of it or whatever, it just has always seemed so light because there's just so many things that happen, so many things that in the moment we think is this is the biggest thing, this is the most important thing. And then, you know, 8 months later, we're like, oh yeah, it didn't mean anything. And yeah, it didn't lead to anything. That's why I wanted to do this and started this many years ago, was there's all these little things, even in a month in November. And even the one I'm going to do December, you know, later this week, there's just little things even that happened a month ago that were like, oh yeah, you know, because there's no end to the news cycle. There's stuff that goes on every single week. So there's no real good, excuse me, reset point. I mean, World's End. I mean, we're talking here on the 29th. We have a couple days left, and I mean, we have, you know, Dynamite coming up. You know, Raw's on Monday. There's no slowdown. Anything can happen at any time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's crazy, but we'll do it. We'll do the best we can here.
That's right. Well, we'll start out this month with WWE, and we'll go to the Survivor Series, of course, and not a, like, hugely newsworthy WWE month, I guess you could say, in terms of, like, the big events. We had, you know, CM Punk joining the OG Bloodline Survivor Series team in the men's War Game match. The OG Bloodline won. Paul Heyman made his return as part of this as well. So, you know, this is something that, you know, many people expect in terms of the, you know, the Bloodline versus OG Bloodline for, you know, for months and months and months. And it worked, you know, made sense. No blood, unfortunately, as we saw in Punk's last time out against Drew McIntyre. But yeah, he joined the team, and really, you know, the story of the match was, again, there was the Bloodline aspect, but really it was Punk and Reigns coexisting. There was this, you know, heat beforehand. even when Paul Heyman returned to SmackDown and announced that that Punk was going to be the mystery man, so to speak. I know it was all speculation, you know, Seth Rollins and blah blah blah, but yeah, Punk joined, and this was kind of the seeding of something that is to come. You know, could be at WrestleMania. We know it's going to happen at some point, just a question of when. And then also this favor that Heyman owes CM Punk for being part of this team, how that plays into it, and we'll talk about that in a minute. Bayley replaced Jade Cargill in the women's War Game match. Cargill's out of action with injury. This was a much discussed topic on social media and websites in terms of was she not injured? Is it coming up for something? I think at this point, the assumption, I can't honestly can't remember where people left off with that, but that she is definitely hurt in some form or fashion. Shinsuke Nakamura won the United States title over LA Knight, and then I'm thinking about Yellowstone too much. Rhea Ripley pinning Liv Morgan to win the women's War Game match, continue their feud, which should be coming to an end at some big event soon. I think, you know, it's been brought up in this series that it might be time to hit that peak and change the title, but we'll see. So yeah, Survivor Series, and not huge news, but you know, continuing evolution not elevation, but the late stage rather in WWE's big storylines as it leads some of their big shows of the year with Rumble and Mania.
Yeah, I think what was most important about the Survivor Series, and you mentioned, you know, the CM Punk joining the Survivor Series team and joining up to, you know, kind of get himself involved in the Bloodline story. I think that's something that we're going to maybe look back on as we start really building towards WrestleMania, and it being a pretty big deal that Punk essentially throwing his hat into the Bloodline mix. And now we know, obviously, with the Royal Rumble will give us some clarity, but I think we all kind of know the clarity won't be there until we know what The Rock says he wants to do, or decides he wants to do, or whatever it may be. And I think it's going to be very fascinating to see how this all plays out, is that CM Punk obviously getting involved in this story is a good backup of, okay, The Rock can't make it, or The Rock doesn't want to make it, or whatever's going to happen with him in WrestleMania. Okay, we can do, if we don't want to go back to Cody and Roman, because you don't really want to do that right now anyway. I don't think it's the time for it anyway. So let's now get Punk involved with Roman for a little bit. Let's maybe, you know, or The Rock gets involved and Cody does something with Punk. You know, there's a lot of different ways that you could possibly go. But I think what this did was it essentially said, okay, Punk is kind of done with the McIntyre stuff. Now he is in this bigger picture story. He's involved in this bigger picture story. And how does that integrate Seth Rollins as well? Or is the Seth Rollins thing going to be separate? I don't know what it's going to all shake out. We have no idea what it's going to look like, you know, in the next couple of months or whatever, but to me, it was important in establishing that Punk is a part of this larger story. And on the road to WrestleMania, I guess I should say, it does make it so that Punk does have some sort of stake in it to be a part of whatever it ends up shaking out as with, you know, and there's a lot of different directions it can go. And again, like I said, a lot of those directions depend on if and when The Rock decides he wants to show up, because when he decides he wants to show up, he's going to get what he wants to do, because, you know, when you're The Rock, you get that sort of power. And I'm fascinated to see how that all plays out, and fascinated to see how Punk kind of fits into all the maneuvering that's going to happen, because it's becoming a bit of a political game here. You know, these WrestleMania main events, these big time spots here, especially when you have, you know, guys that have that cachet and have that power like The Rock does.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, they have to know if he's going to definitely be real. I
I
mean,
mean, I
right?
would, yeah, I would hope so, but I think I do. Part of me believes, and I don't know, I don't have any evidence of this, but part of me believes that The Rock kind of enjoys the idea that he can sort of just. I mean, we saw that with what was the show, Backlash or whatever. Was that the name of the show? I forget. You probably did it, where he just shows up and just decides, hey, I want a segment. And they're like, all right. So he has to come out with his little belt, and, you know, and it makes no sense in the context of the story. It just so happened that The Rock said, I want to be on the show and I want a segment, so put me on the segment at the end of the show where I have my little belt. Like, I feel like he still kind of has that power, and I would assume that they have said, are you in or are you out? And the question I have is did The Rock give them a definitive answer? Did he say yes or no? Or is he going to wait till after the Royal Rumble, see where the stories kind of go, and decide, oh, okay, yeah, now I feel comfortable interjecting myself in this? But I'm with you. They should hopefully know, and hopefully have told The Rock, okay, this is the last final day that you have to kind of change anything, especially before the Royal Rumble. You don't want to have the Royal Rumble happen and have somebody win and then decide, oh no, never mind, The Rock wants to take the spot, so we have to figure out a way to kind of maneuver out of it. I would hope that maybe, you know, a week before the Rumble, you say, all right, this is it. You need to tell us right now if you're in or you're out, because we need to book this fuck this Royal Rumble. We need to have this thing all ready to go. But I don't know, man. I think The Rock kind of thrives on that, on a little bit of those power plays, especially, you know, with someone like a Paul Levesque at the helm. You know, him and Paul have not necessarily, you know, they're not career rivals, but I don't know that they've always seen eye to eye.
Sure. Yeah, I think in the show you're thinking of is Bad Blood, which
Bad
happened
Blood.
In
that was
so,
it. Yes.
And so the only reason I know that is because I was doing the series. I had a note in my thing saying, "Oh, the Rock appeared," and I'm like, I had to ask, like, "What? Do you remember what he did?" And they're like, "Oh, he just came out and
right,
just pointed at Cody Rhodes," and it was so. I mean, that's crazy. The Rock made an appearance, and his first appearance since that Raw after Mania, and I had no idea what he did in the show and what it led to. Nothing has happened with it since.
Right. He just came out. He had his little Brahma Bowl belt for some reason. He pointed. The guys in the ring looked, and then he went away, and it was like, all right. And then it was never talked about again. And like you said, never a part of any story afterwards. Like 2 weeks later, you had no idea that happened, and it was never followed up on. So that's what I mean. The Rock's got a weird vibe now where it feels like he can sort of just show up whenever he wants to show up and do whatever he wants to do. And I do wonder if they let him continue to have that power going into WrestleMania, or if they put their foot down and say, no, you have to tell us at this date what's going to happen, because we need to book WrestleMania. We can't be on the whim of whenever you decide you want to show up.
Agreed. And interesting, Cody Rhodes was not part of Survivor Series, but he already was part of Crown Jewel. That also happened this month. Remember that? Mm-hmm. Cody Rhodes and Liv Morgan winning the inaugural Crown Jewel Championships, these massive title belts that were, I haven't seen anything like this in a long time. However, they're not allowed to bring the belts home. They would instead receive quote unquote massive rings to take home to honor them. Sami Zayn returned to the Bloodline angle during the show. Of course, he was part of the Survivor Series match as well. And the company said that no big surprise, Crown Jewel is the most watched Saudi Arabia event in company history. I don't remember much about the show, to be honest. I mean, these were kind of the big headlines from this, but yeah, it was a show that happened. And yeah, the thing I remember the most is the massive title belts. And that we also saw a Cody Rhodes Gunter match, I believe the first time ever, and it just happened overseas, and it didn't feel like it had the gravitas, I think, because these shows still, even though they're in canon, there's just something about the shows taking place there just doesn't feel like they feel like it's an alternate universe to me for whatever reason.
For sure, they definitely feel still like house shows in big arenas.
Yeah,
more so than an actual part of the. Because like you said, they're in canon and they do matter, and they are things. But this one in particular felt like it almost wasn't in canon. You know what I mean? Like you have a tag title match that nothing changes. You know, the Bianca Belair and Jade retain the titles, and then you have, you know, LA Knight retain his title, his US title, and then these other championship matches were just these, you know, for these Crown Jewel championships that we're never going to talk about, are never going to be seen until next year's Crown Jewel. Like you said, yeah, they got the rings or whatever, but largely they just happen to happen. You know what I mean? And they're not, it's kind of reminds me of, and I'm sure you remember this back in, you know, 96, 97, I think were the 2 years they used to do the Kuwaiti Cup. In the WWF, they'd go over there and like they'd be like, yeah, and it would show it on TV for a couple weeks. They'd be like, oh, overseas, you know, this guy won the Kuwaiti Cup and whatever. And then like I think Tiger Ali Singh won like the 97 Kuwaiti Cup. I do not remember who won the 96 Kuwaiti Cup, but they were like these house shows that were in big stadiums, and they kind of matter, but they also kind of didn't matter. And then after they were done, like none of the results really had any sort of large stakes, although I guess in a way Gunther losing to Cody Rhodes has been a part of Gunther's story of, you know, his loss in confidence or whatever that he would do throughout December and maybe now into January. We'll see of Gunther not having confidence after he lost to Cody Rhodes or whatever. He was so unbeatable and then Cody beat him and now he's trying to get back there. Whereas Cody, it just kind of feels like you said, he had this match with Gunther, which felt like a really big match on paper. And then you watched it and then it happened and it just kind of felt like another Cody thing and didn't seem to really, you know, like you said, the gravitas is a great word to put it. It didn't have that, where this should have been a bigger match and a bigger deal, and it really felt like it just kind of happened in a vacuum and then disappeared.
Yeah, you have your two big champions going at it for the first time in both cases. I mean, Nia Jax, you know, that doesn't seem, you know, the Nia Jax Liv Morgan match, because we've seen it before, didn't feel they had any, I mean, we've seen it before, but the Rhodes versus Gunter match, I mean, that seemed to, like, to me, if you going into this year, that was like, okay, you're going to lead to something pretty big with that. And it just happened and went away, and I don't remember really anything about it. So yeah, and also I just, while you were talking, I just happened to search Kuwait Cup in 1996. Ahmed Johnson won the Kuwait Cup.
Ahmed. Oh, I should have known that.
Yes.
Come on. That was my favorites growing up. I loved Ahmed Johnson as a kid.
De
I like him as an adult too. He's pretty crazy.
defeating Triple H in the finals. How about that? Triple H
There
should
it
not give
is.
himself. Triple H can always say, I gave up the Kuwait Cup in 96, you know? That's
Right. If anybody, yeah, if anybody fights back on a booking decision, say, hey, look, in 1996 in Kuwait, I said, I'll do the job. It's fine, you know.
That'd be so funny if you someone yeah disputing something or intern, like, oh man, this is a bummer. I can't wait. He's like, look, I remember back in 1996, Kuwait Cup, brother. It's hard sometimes. Just gotta do what's best for the company.
Right. We're a global brand. You got to think about it, man. Yeah.
That's right. Let's go over this first chunk of WWE news here, and I'll kick it over to you for thoughts on any of this. The company announced a slate of Raw and SmackDown dates for the early part of 2025. Notable because no house shows. All Raws, all SmackDowns, all PLEs. So the house show era, for the most part, as we knew it and we grew up knowing it, is essentially dead, at least for the 2025. Something we knew was coming, but kind of when you see it on paper, it's a sobering thought. And yeah, our childhoods continue to be erased by the TKO conglomerate. The company announced they're heading to Europe, doing a few house shows over there, I should say, for Raw and SmackDown and some live events as part of the Road to WrestleMania tour. Of course, Europe is just this whole thing where they are making a ton of money over there and selling out all over the place. So pretty big news there. An elderly man was scammed out of nearly $1 million by an Alexa Bliss impersonator. It is just
Awful, yeah.
I see these headlines. It's just unbelievable. Let's see. Carl Anderson set to undergo shoulder surgery. He's from BSA out for 6 to 7 months. Bruce Pritchard and Michael Hayes on temporary leave from WWE for health reasons, and then I think an undisclosed reason, if I remember right. Toronto set to host and eliminate the Elimination Chamber show. So more international PLEs are coming. I think there was eight this past year, or this year rather. And I think Mark Shapiro said that that was going to increase in 2025. So we'll have to see what happens there. Kind of wild that that's the era we're in, but here we are. The WWE ID program launched in earnest in terms of names being announced. A few of the names here, I should have put in the whole list, like Jack Cartwheel, Kylie Rae was announced as part of this program, and then also some lesser known people like Sean Legacy, Zaza Zeker, and others. It was a growing list, and it was an interesting list as kind of how they spread some things out. Really hit up the Northeast quite a bit in terms of talent with people like Aaron Rourke. Ricky Smokes, people that I've seen on indies here in New England for quite some time. Of course, Jack Cartwheel, really well known. Kylie Rae, of course, we know, she had her center cup of coffee with AEW. It was just kind of, and then eventually left, all types of problems there, and has got her life back on track and looks great in the ring. And she's part of this program as well. Of course, we don't know still a lot about the program. Heard, a few things here and there, but nothing kind of official. So we'll see how that goes. The company announced both the Women's United States Championship and the Women's Intercontinental Championship and tournaments for both of those. Randy Orton was written off TV for a bit, probably a nice extended holiday for him. Stretchered out after a Kevin Owens pile driver in an injury angle on SmackDown. And they gave this announcement of all these injuries he had. This is the kind of, they love doing this. They just list all these. They go like a medical journal and like list off all these different types of ailments and anything associated with a neck or a back or something like that. They do that. The Jade Cargill one, they did that as well when she was written off TV. There was a report that and ended up being true that they were planning a Saturday night's main event for January, which is confirmed. Cody Rhodes appeared on ESPN's College Game Day. Becky Lynch expect to be back in the mix with WWE soon. Still has not made her first appearance since her contract expired, but many people assume that she's coming back. Becky Lynch also made an appearance at Vulture Festival and hinted at her WWE future. Travis Scott was set to appear or announced to appear at WWE Raw, and his music would serve as the Raw on Netflix theme. Alexa Bliss, speaking of her, teased her return, saying the timing is not up to me as of, again, the end of December. Still have not seen her yet. CM Punk had this quote that made its way around and caused a lot of chatter, saying he feels he wasted best some matches on some people in AEW. And then Linda McMahon nominated as education secretary in Donald Trump's cabinet. And we learned that she and Vince McMahon, I hope everyone's sitting down, are currently separated.
Oh, his wife at that time is We now know what that finally means, that
Yes.
they're
Yeah.
separated. Who could have you thought it was a dream. You thought it was a relationship that just could never end, a
Yeah.
rock solid relationship, but apparently it is no more. But yeah, that's a lot. There's a good amount in there that I think is worth discussing a bit. The one that I was going to bring up at first is, like you said, the kind of the death of house shows, or the end of house shows. And this is something that I it's something that, like, I can't believe they still existed for as long as they did, even through like the publicly traded era of WWE, WWE as its own company, publicly traded or whatever. Because if you ever watched or took part or listened to or read a recap or whatever of the quarterly calls that they used to do with Vince McMahon, at the helm, and George Berrios at times as well, they would always get to like these live events, and as they would discuss these live events, they were pretty big money losers for the most part. They were, and they would kind of describe them as like loss leaders. You know what I mean? We do these house shows because it exposes our fans to our superstars or whatever, and it lets us get out to these different markets and grow the brand or whatever. But ultimately, they don't make money. Ultimately, yes, they do cause a lot of issues for the wrestlers to travel to all these different shows, to take extra bumps, to get hurt on these shows. Like, these are all risks that we take to make sure that we are in different towns and going to different places and exposing ourselves to different fans. So I was always surprised that at one point, in their publicly traded era, that someone didn't say, "Well, this is losing money, so let's stop doing it." And I think that the company with Vince McMahon at the helm always thought, "No, house shows are something we should still be doing, even if we're losing money. It's okay, because ultimately we're going to make money in the end." A classic like loss leader concept here. And I was always like, yeah, they should probably just get rid of them, because it doesn't make sense for the bump card. It doesn't make sense because it's losing money. And now that they have gotten rid of them, I'm kind of like, oh man, it's one of those things where I think financially it makes all the sense in the world to get rid of them. But getting rid of them is also a very, I it could backfire in a lot of ways. It could be something that, there might have unintended consequences, especially for fans of certain areas. Fans of certain towns, fans of certain regions of the country are just not going to get live wrestling, a major league wrestling anymore from WWE. They're just not going to come to their town unless you're going to have a big basketball arena that they can host Raw in, or you have a big stadium they can host a pay-per-view in. You're pretty much not going to get anything live. And that, I think that is a bit of a bummer. And I do wonder if that will have lasting effects on certain regions and certain fan bases or whatever, because I do think there is an importance of house shows. For that particular reason, even if I understand the financial obligations of it and the financial ramifications of it don't really make any sense, and TKO, this now conglomerate, would look at this number and look at a loss next to it and this big red thing on their spreadsheet and say, "What are we doing here? Get rid of this stuff. We don't need this. Get this out of here." And it makes it, but and there's also the aspect too of guys getting better in the ring and going through their matches and getting reps and those sort of things. I think that's important as well for development of wrestlers. So that's kind of an unintended consequence. But on the flip side, it also, in negotiations, particularly with another, competitor in the marketplace with AEW, being able to now say that we have pretty much the same amount of dates that AEW has. That's a great marketing thing, because AEW, that was one of their early, well, how they got a lot of the people in 2019 was, okay, they make you do house shows and they make you travel all across the country all throughout the year. We don't. We have Dynamite, and we have sometimes this Rampage show, and that's it. You know what I mean? And that's all you really need to do is come in for this one week and come in for the pay-per-view, and you're good to go, and you can go back to your family and do all that sort of stuff. Well, now WWE is essentially presenting the same thing to their roster of saying, okay, you're on Raw, you come on Monday, you come for a pay-per-view, and then you're good. And then you're good to go. You know what I mean? And so that is interesting. And I'm very curious how it all plays out, and if we ever see them return to the house show cycle at all, if they ever do bring it back or find out there's unintended consequences. But I think for when you're a company like TKO, you're that conglomerate, you're just going to look at it and say, "This is losing money. Why are we doing this?" And that makes, again, it makes all the financial sense in the world to eliminate them.
Yeah, I did a column about this. I went to a AEW show in what could be, I guess, considered, a C or D town. And as Mark Shapiro put it, just based on population, about 100,000, 110,000 people in Manchester, New Hampshire, which is about an hour or so away from where I am. And yeah, that was a big, I was standing outside. I'm like, there is, I remember going, I grew up on house shows in C towns, C and D towns in Portland, Maine, and Bangor, Maine, and Manchester, and these places that, we're seen as WWE strongholds, and they would come here. I saw a WCW show, my lone WCW show I saw in a small, relatively small town outside where I went to college. And it was those places are just, unless AEW hits them up, there's not, I mean, I don't see TNA doing this barnstorming tour all around just because the way their business model is and stuff. It's really, it's either if WWE doesn't do them, it's really up to AEW. If AEW doesn't do them, it sucks for my angle on it was for fans that may not want to go to the big city. You know what I mean? They may not be able to afford it. And, going to a smaller house show, it allowed them to afford it and see these people they see on TV and not have to, you're going to pay some money, but it's not going to be like holy shit money. But yeah, you're going to, if someone's traveling multiple hours to go to the big city, you have to stay in a hotel. Maybe it's reasonable. They can't drive back that night. It's just in paying these higher ticket prices, which TKO has said they're going to do. That sucks, but it's a reality of the business. It's how do you keep that connection point and not price people out to the point they're like, I wish I could go, but we just can't afford it. And wrestling really never feels like it's ever been that way, but it feels like with WWE, it's going to get there. And then by the time maybe they reverse course and try to do something different, you may be too late because you've driven some fans away. I don't know. That's kind of my take on it as well.
No. And there's definitely, I mean, I'm sure there's people listening to this right now that are in these sort of towns. Like I'm lucky to, be in the Chicago suburbs and have very easy access to the Rosemont Horizon / Allstate Arena or the United Center or whatever. So I've always had an opportunity to go to these shows and not have a problem, but I have a lot of friends now that grew up in different areas around Illinois. Like Rockford is a place that would always get WWE house shows.
Yeah.
It's about an hour and a half away from Chicago. So you can make that drive, but that's a long night, man. If you're going for a Raw, that's an hour and a half drive to get from Rockford to Chicago, watch the entire show, drive back, or are you getting a hotel? Like that's added cost. The ticket prices are going to be bigger and the ticket demand is going to be a lot bigger because you're saying, okay, well, this is the one opportunity. We're in Chicago for this day. So this is your one opportunity for everybody in this area to come and watch us. So you're going to pay top price if you're anywhere in the area, because it's the only time you're going to be able to see us, and then I also have buddies who grew up in like Peoria, which is about 2.5 hours, 3 hours away from Chicago. That's not a very realistic drive. Like that's really difficult to say, I'm going to drive 6 hours to go to this wrestling show. Like that's a very, very difficult thing to justify and might not be financially viable for a lot of people. So, it makes financial sense. Like you said, it makes, you understand why a TKO, a conglomerate would just say, yeah, no, get rid of these stupid towns. Who gives a shit? We're good. But yeah, I do wonder if it's going to have an effect on the way that certain fans engage with the product and understand that, okay, I'm never going to be able to see, because one of the classic things about, territory wrestling and major wrestling was, watching the shows and saying, hey, we're coming to your town. And then on the bottom, the scroll would come by. And again, like I said, I was always lucky that I lived in Chicago, but I would still get that same thing when they're like, all right, December 22nd, we'll be in Chicago. I'm like, well, God, I got to go. That's awesome. That's so cool. And the idea that that's just not going to be a thing anymore. That it's just like, yeah, if you don't have a major basketball arena or a major stadium and you're not in a major city, we're probably just not going to come to your town ever. And we're probably not going to be there's a good chance we might not be anywhere near the town you live at, or we're going to be hours away from the town you live at. I think that does have I do think that's going to have a profound effect. I just can't imagine it not having an effect on how certain fans deal with the product. And then real quickly, the ID program was the other part I wanted to talk about a bit, because I think it's a pretty interesting thing that they're doing. And I do wonder, again, from the TKO side, because you have to look at a lot of these decisions from the fact that, the WWE company that we know of from the past 20, 30 years is not the same company it is today. It's a very, very different company with the TKO, merger and conglomerate or whatever you want to call it. And the ID program to me seems a bit of a throwback in a lot of ways. It feels like a throwback to the developmental territories days of OVW and Deep South and these kind of companies, and even further back, Memphis Championship Wrestling or whatever, where you kind of rely on these certain wrestling schools and these certain wrestling promotions across the country to train your guys, as opposed to simply sending everybody up into the PC and saying, all right, now here's how you learn to be a WWE superstar, because that has not had as good of an output as it probably should have, given the amount of investment that they've put in it. But what I think that I still think the PC is valuable when you sign these NIL people out of college, because for people that don't follow college sports, you don't realize that these college sports gyms and training centers are absolutely insane. And this is on every level too. The D1 training facilities are insane, but D3, you go to a D3 school and you look at their gym now, compared to where it was 20, 30 years ago. And it's like, holy crap. Like, this is unbelievable. What a gym this is. This is incredible. So these people that come from college sports are getting high level training at high level facilities. And if you wanted to go back to the true developmental territory era and say, all right, we're going to close down the PC and we're just going to use these different training schools across the country, you're not going to sign these NIL people. You're not going to get the former, you know, backup linebacker from Maryland and say, all right, man, I know that you've trained in like a multi-million dollar facility for the last 4 years. Well, here's your ticket to, you know, Des Moines, Iowa. You're going to train in like a, you know, it used to be a pawn shop, but now it's a training school. Like, you know, that's going to be a tough sell to these guys. Hey, here's a one-way bus ticket to Des Moines where you're going to learn under two great guys. I mean, I think Merrick Brave and Seth Rollins and are doing a great job with the Black and Brave Academy, but there's a big difference from going to a multi-million dollar facility to a converted pawn shop with a wrestling ring in it. You know, that's a big deal in Des Moines, Iowa. So I think there's a certain purpose in still having the PC. But I think they acknowledge that people that have real wrestling training don't necessarily need the PC training. They need training, you know, additional training by moving across the country and wrestling in front of different crowds and wrestling in front of different people and doing the old track that used to make wrestlers great. You know, the old track that used to make wrestlers great was this sort of system of you come up through a wrestling school, you train with that wrestling school, and then you just do shows and you hit the road and you get in cars and you wrestle in front of different people for different people. You do different characters in different places. You do all these sort of different things. That, I think they're acknowledging, is the path to truly making it in the wrestling business and not necessarily coming to the PC and being one of, you know, 70 people doing a hip toss class, you know, all at the same time and all learning the same way and doing that sort of thing. It seems to stunt growth for people that have true wrestling backgrounds as opposed to, you know, this ID thing. So we haven't necessarily seen all of it play out just yet. We don't exactly know the ramifications of it just yet, but when I saw this roll out, I said, yeah, this is basically an acknowledgement that, you know, professional wrestlers that come up through the normal wrestling system need to continue to be in that wrestling system. WWE just wants to kind of, you know, stake a claim on some people, you know, as they're up on, you know, moving up the ladder.
Yeah, so the list, Aaron Rourke, Brad Baylor, Bryce Donovan, Cappuccino Jones, Freedom Ramsey, Ice Williams, Jack Cartwheel, Jackson Drake, Jordan Oasis, which is that, is that Jordan Oliver or Jordan Oasis?
Jordan Oasis is not. No, Jordan Oliver has not been tagged just yet, but he seems like a guy that at some point they would. No, Jordan Oasis, I think he is a Washington, California guy, I believe. He does some stuff up in that region.
Marcus Mathers, Gal, Ricky Smokes, Sam Hardaway Holloway, Sean Legacy, Zoe Sager, Kylie Ray, Zara Zaker, and of course, Zeta Steele. So that's your current list of talent there. So yeah, I agree with your sentiments. Let's go to the rest of WWE. Dragon Lee defending Andrade for the Speed title. That still exists. Jade Cargill signed with Paradigm Talent Agency Sports Group. Big year of talents, wrestlers signing with different talent agencies. CM Punk tapped for a new sci-fi scripted series. Netflix started the big push with some of their ads promoting WWE's debut in January. Lyra Valkyria was set to appear in an Irish indie event. Cody Rhodes is another quote that made some news, saying we should call this the record era of WWE. A lot of people didn't like that for whatever reason. Eric and Valhalla welcomed the birth of their second child. We had some releases and departures. Baron Corbin, Indy Hartwell, and Tegan Knox done with the company. Goldberg, he's back, announced a WWE retirement match for 2025. We don't know who it's going to be or who it's going to be against or where, but we assume it's going to be Gunther at some point and probably a relatively big show. Angel Garza out of action following wrist surgery. This whole thing with Jacob Fatu and the no-show and the nonprofit deal from a couple of years ago. this like came up on social media again. And we learned that, of course, Jacob Fatu had resolved the issue with the organization back in June. Why it took so long after that is beyond me. I think if you no-show a nonprofit event and they're out money, you just make it right, like ASAP. I don't know. Very strange. A TKO exec recently met. This is, of course, Mark Shapiro. Say he recently met with Vince McMahon. This is in November. Say he was very positive about WWE's current direction. Reiterate, of course, Vince no longer involved, not involved in any way, shape, form, fashion. Dakota Kai made her return to in-ring action. Shinsuke Nakamura returned, attacked LA Knight. Of course, that led to him winning the U.S. title at Survivor Series. Braun Strowman returned from injury in a SmackDown Dark match. The company confirmed that Los Angeles and the brand new Intuit Dome would be where Raw's Netflix premiere would take place. Travis Scott, as I just mentioned earlier, doing the theme. He's going to be part of that show. WWE Network set a shutdown date as the Netflix launch neared. Of course, that being for the international WWE Network, and a lot of people not thrilled about that, especially with this the infamous statement of select programming will make its way to Netflix. And everyone's like, "What does that mean? I have access to everything." Not anymore, you're not. And
No, you
everyone's
do
like,
not.
"No, you're not."
You used to have access to everything. You will not anymore. No, that is I'm definitely nervous about the future of, wrestling. WWE has, a large amount of pro wrestling history in their archives, and a lot of that has been available very easily. But as we've sort of seen with the network and Peacock and the numbers that have come out, like, not a lot of people watch that stuff. Like I do. But we're, there might be some people listening to this that do, but trust us, we're the freaks that are watching this stuff. Most other people are not cracking their knuckles and watching, 1984, June 1984 episodes of Mid-South Wrestling. Like, there's a very, very small amount of people that are doing that. And the days of, these streaming services basically just throwing on everything they possibly could to get you to sign up, those are kind of done now. And I'm very nervous about how much makes its way to the internet and makes it way legally, to watch a lot of that stuff moving forward, because I don't think Netflix is going to grab very much of that stuff at all. And
No.
the WWE Vault YouTube account is doing a great job, but it's not going to be able to, they're not set up to upload, 200,000 hours of content.
They could charge for it. That's the one thing. If they
They
charge
should.
for, they make a, charge for a access to different series or what, just make it, use YouTube and, sign a deal with YouTube or something like that. There's a way to do it if they want to.
Absolutely.
WWE Fanatics filed to dismiss the Cody Rhodes American Nightmare trademark lawsuit. New Day's 10th anniversary celebration set for an episode of Raw. Of course, we know how that would turn out. And then the first Saturday night's main event revival main event was set with Cody Rhodes taking on Kevin Owens. Thoughts about any of that?
Big picture thoughts about some of that stuff. Obviously, I talked about the network, shut down, and the Netflix launch and stuff. And this is kind of relevant as we're speaking about this now here on December 29th. But I don't know about you, but I was a little worried about what was going to happen when Netflix, when Raw debuted on Netflix on January 6th. Of like, oh man, like, is this thing going to work? Because a lot of Netflix live streams were not working at all. I mean, they had a disaster with the Love Is Blind thing. They had a disaster with the Tom Brady roast. They had an absolute disaster with the Jake Paul Mike Tyson thing on just not delivering on the live stream. So my big thought was, what is WWE going to say about this? And how is WWE going to be ready if it just doesn't work? If like January 6th happens and Netflix starts streaming and it just doesn't work. I think those questions have been a little alleviated after Christmas Day, because I don't know about you, but I was watching some of the NFL stuff on Netflix, and it was fine. It looked good. It streamed well. I know there was a couple people here and there that had issues, but nothing like there was, absolutely nothing like there was for Paul and Tyson, which when that fight was done, the bigger talking point that everybody had was, I couldn't watch it. It didn't work. As I was watching this on, little clips here and there, it was freezing constantly. I had to always refresh or whatever. So that was kind of the prevailing, discussion point after that fight. And I was like, oh man, if I'm WWE, I got to be like, oh crap, what are we going to do here? Because if this thing debuts and nobody can watch it, like, that's not going to go well at all. That's that we definitely don't want that. So I think after Christmas Day, there's probably a little bit of tension relieved, but I think there is still a thought that, hey, this is the first time that WWE is going to be relying on this very new technology to show their top show, their flagship show with Raw. And I think that's going to be very interesting to see how discovery of the Netflix show happens. If you're going to get a bunch of new people that are just on Netflix and say, ah, yeah, I'll watch the wrestling, why not? I'll click it on. Or if you have older fans that don't have Netflix and aren't really eager to jump onto Netflix, like, I can't wait to see how it sort of plays out, because this is the first foray into a completely different world for professional wrestling. I mean, moving Raw from, I never would have thought I'd seen the day where Raw is just not going to be available on normal TV and I have to have Netflix to watch Raw. It seems unfathomable. Even though I told you that 3 years ago, you would say, I don't know, that sounds kind of weird. Are you sure? Like that. It's just, I never thought this day would come, and we're here, and this, as you said, it really, the first ads came out here in November, really promoting that this is happening. This really is happening. And Raw is going to be on Netflix. And for international people, everything's on Netflix. It's just Netflix is now the home of WWE content, which I think is just, wild that it's gotten to this point.
Yeah, I wonder, there's this and with the T Tony Khan really is driving this home with on Max's potential's brand new audience. And I mean, I think Yeah, I think they'll get some more viewers, but I don't, I don't know. I mean, how many more are they going to get? They're pretty much just going to consolidate their viewers, right?
Yeah, I
For
agree. That's
internationally.
overstated. I think that's very overstated, the amount of people that are just, because I don't know about you. I don't really, I mean, sometimes I'll go onto these apps and just kind of click around, but I usually have a somewhat of an intention
Yeah, of
of
course,
what
yeah.
I'm going to watch. I have somewhat of an idea of maybe the genre I want to watch or something like that. But yeah, I don't know how many people are just going to, crack their knuckles on a random Monday night and turn on Netflix and go, whoa, wrestling. All right, here we go, and turn that on and be completely engaged with the product moving forward. Maybe, but it's a 3-hour show too. I don't know that. I'm also that's also a thing that might deter some people of saying, all right, yeah, this, this thing that, oh, I remember wrestling, I haven't watched wrestling in years or whatever. And it's like, okay, we're an hour one of a 3-hour show. You might go, whoa, hold on, I don't know if I necessarily need 3 full hours. But no, I agree that it's a little overstated, the amount of discovery that's going to happen on these apps. And
Yeah.
I think it's, you're going to get new people. You're definitely going to get some new people that check it out. But yeah, I don't know that long-term growth is really going to be there. I think it's just an easier way for your current fan base to watch the shows
Yeah,
if they don't have cable or whatever.
I think Saturday night's main event, that was, I think domestically, I mean, that was a wake-up call in terms of like you're on broadcast TV and it's not like the numbers shot up that much, right? I think it's really it's internationally consolidating, and that's I think a big reason why they've made this international push is they're like we're kind of at the if I'm them I'm wondering we're kind of at the saturation point when it comes to how many new fans we can add realistically. Awareness is certainly up, I think, in terms of that, and ticket prices, those are going to continue to go up, and they're going to see how far they can go with that. But yeah, I think internationally when it comes to viewers, I think that is where you're going to get the most increase, and then also that consolidation factor, what I was mentioning before, is that you don't have, 8, 10 different network partners around the world. You have, one, and that's going to be a big positive. And then, yeah, when those last few deals run out, it's the one-stop shop. And then we'll see what happens with the PLEs and Peacock next year, right? I mean, when that negotiation goes up, and a lot of people assume Netflix is going to be it, but who knows? Someone may be like, no, we'll pay more for this, but Netflix seems like the right spot, but yeah, it'd be interesting to see what happens with that in the year ahead.
Absolutely. It's definitely a different, we've been so used to how WWE business has run for decades, and it always seemed to be run in this in a very certain way. And TKO is kind of, in a very short amount of time, has really kind of changed that entire thing and basically
Yeah.
said, look, we don't want to sit and negotiate, 500 different deals in all these different countries or whatever. One place, watch all of our product. There you go. Give us a bunch of money. We're good. And now they don't have to think about it. They don't have to worry about it ever again until the next deal is up. Everything is on Netflix. There we go. And like you said, I'm sure that they'll shop around in some form or fashion, when the Peacock deal is done. But I mean, we probably safely assume that they would just prefer to also put it on Netflix. Just tell Netflix, hey, give us an offer we can't refuse. And then you just have everything. And then there's one place, and we just say, WWE is on Netflix. Go to Netflix. Watch WWE on Netflix. That's where you go. I'm assuming that's the way they want to go. And again, it cleans up the process, but it also does feel, it's just very different. And I do wonder if there's maybe some money being left at the table, but largely they don't care. They just want to have it be a little cleaner and a little easier and just, tell fans and tell everybody, we're on Netflix. Go to Netflix. That's where all of our stuff is.
All right, let's go to the month in AEW and Ring of Honor. Two big story threads through the month. Full Gear, again, not a huge news event ridden show. We had Daniel Garcia defeating Jack Perry for the TNT title. Willow Nightingale returned after her concussion to attack Maria Shafir and be part of that kind of whole Death Riders angle, at least briefly. Paul Walter Hauser, part of the pre-show panel, and I've again remain convinced that he's going to be in the ring at some point. I mean, who possibly against Big Boom AJ, who won his AEW debut against QT Marshall? We learned what a worker, what a mensch, working through a broken foot. And then the Rizzler was also there, Big Justice, so the whole gang was there. And in terms of visibility, a lot of people did not like this. I'm fine with it. Wasn't big. It's hard when you see across the street, so to speak, all these big stars and music stars, and then you have a guy talking about double chunk chocolate cookies and things like that is your big job, but it is what it is, and he seems to be having fun with it, and he'll be sticking around for a while, so we'll see more about them. The company secured November Rain by Guns N' Roses to promote Full Gear. I now never he need to hear the song ever again, but the amount of times they used it over and over and over and over again,
Got their money's worth for sure.
they certainly did. Now they got Welcome to the Jungle, so now they're fully in bed with Axl Rose. How about that? But yeah, this was a show that it pretty much was chalk when it terms of championship matches. We had Moxley being Cassidy in the main event, Bobby Lashley winning in his I almost said debut, but should have been his debut, but his second AEW match being Swerve Strickland, Takeshita defeating Ricochet, the outstanding, of course, Kyle Fletcher Ospreay match, and then the first Monet Statlander match. So, I mean, as all these AEW pay-per-views go, and again, we're just coming off of World's End, I didn't see a lot of variance between. Now I'm looking back at it, Full Gear and World's End in terms of impact and all those type of things. Granted, we had two big returns last night, but again, not a lot of title matches where you think, oh, the challenger really has a chance. I think most people assumed it was time for Garcia to win the title. Just felt right. But yeah, it was again, in-ring is never the problem with these shows. It's the feeling that you get going into them. And the feeling that you have coming out with them. And Full Gear was kind of like, this is fine. This is what I expect. And now it's like, we'll kind of see where things go. But didn't have that kind of like big apex feeling, I guess you could say, for me anyway.
Yeah, I think AEW is, as you know, I think their pay-per-views are still some of the best bets in wrestling in terms of in-ring. Like, you know that you're going to get a pretty damn good in-ring product every single time the pay-per-views come. And they've actually been the part of their business that it does feel like has not suffered at all. Like, people still buy tickets to the pay-per-views. They understand that when they buy a ticket to the pay-per-view, they're going to get a certain show. They're going to get a certain type of show. They're going to get good in-ring wrestling. And that largely pay-per-view buys have so far stayed pretty good from the numbers that we do have available to us, which of course we don't really have access to public numbers in that sense. We have to take some a few people's word on where those numbers are. But I don't know that they've fully, like you said, I don't know if they fully adjusted or kind of figured out the monthly pay-per-view cycle just yet, because they come and they go, and like you said, there's a few things here and there, but they're not super memorable. In a lot of ways, where I think we got used to AEW pay-per-views being memorable during the early days because they were quarterly or they were just a couple of times per year. So you knew, okay, it is Full Gear's coming up. A bunch of shit's going to happen. A bunch of new things are going to happen. A bunch of very important, newsworthy things are going to happen. And now it's like they're on the weekly paper or the monthly pay-per-view cycle. So you have these monthly pay-per-views. There's usually pretty good matches throughout, and there's maybe a couple of things here and there, but they don't feel like these gigantic, voluminous, world-altering events they used to feel like, and we'll probably get used to that in due time. WWE, when they started doing monthly pay-per-views, it kind of got to that, they started to settle into a point too eventually where you're like, oh yeah, it's this pay-per-view is this pay-per-view and whatever. But yeah, I feel like AEW still needs to kind of figure out a little bit more of how to make these pay-per-views really stand out. But like I said, they have been retained the business in a lot of ways that their TV and other aspects of AEW business has not retained, consistently selling tickets, consistently selling buys and consistent quality. Like, the pay-per-views are still, I think, the best bet in wrestling, that that if you buy a ticket to this show, you're going to get pretty damn good wrestling and a very fun event and usually a very good event. And you don't always know that when you buy TV tickets, TV tickets to a Dynamite or a Collision or whatever. And I think it's reflected in the business as, metrics for both of those shows.
Yep, I would agree. Let's go with the month in Ricky Starks. I
there's a
debate.
lot. I was scrolling and I was like, there's more Ricky Starks notes than
Oh
some of these
my
other things. There's a
God,
lot.
it's crazy. All right, so the month in Ricky Starks. So of course, Ricky Starks was still out of the picture. Not basically, he was out of the picture in AEW, but still under contract. He did this long interview with Chris Van Vliet, and talked about a lot of stuff, and said that he said his absence felt like a mind fuck, as he put it. He is still, again, going back to his last appearance, I believe, was in March, and just had there was nothing about it. Tony Khan was asked about it, just kind of didn't really answer directly. It was the usual Tony Khan answers. He talked about the infamous promo with Adam Copeland when he mentioned Ricky Starks the Rock ripoff, and said it wasn't him who came off looking bad. I mean, remember that kind of that. Tete on tete, so to speak, seemed to change things a little bit, and didn't it felt like things got a little bit heated between them in not a great way. So possibly that had something to do. I don't know. He appeared, however, the big news really is that he appeared at GCW Dream On, and this was at the I believe the mall. It was the Mall of America, right, Minneapolis.
I think that's where this one was. Yeah, I'm pretty
He
sure.
was going down the escalator. Remember that?
Classic, yeah, the
Just
classic.
great entrance, I believe it was there because of that. So I appeared
Okay,
there.
sorry, it
Go
was
ahead.
not. It was in East Rutherford, New Jersey. It was the American Dream. mall, I guess. So,
American Dream Mall. Got it. I need to update my malls and escalators and things
yeah.
like that. You're right. You're right. Okay. Yes. Yeah, that makes sense. 'Cause it was happening around the same time as Full Gear, if I remember right.
Yes, and there is a company that does run First Wrestling out of
Yes.
Minneapolis. They run Mall of America, I think, once a year, and it's always great. And I think more companies should run in malls for sure. It's
Yes.
such a
Oh my
good, the
God.
aesthetics are incredible. I love it so much.
As a person that as a kid loved to go to malls. I mean, that could be. I mean, AEW could. That's AEW, TNA, hell, even WWE, NXT. They should be running mall circuits. You know what I mean? Just bring
Absolutely. Yeah,
fans
you
back
probably
to the
get them for
malls. Yeah.
cheap now, especially now. I mean, God, I'm sure every mall around the country would be more than happy and more than accommodating to say, hi, we're going to put on a wrestling show and bring people to your mall. They would probably say, sure, that sounds great because our current system isn't working very well. So, yeah, we'll bring people. And you know what? It's a perfect way to sort of, if maybe you have a family that doesn't necessarily, they're not really into wrestling, they don't really want you to go to wrestling, you have obligations, you can say, oh, hey guys, let's go to the mall. And then you show up, you go, whoa, a wrestling show, can you guys believe it? I can't believe it. Well, we're here, we might as well stay and watch. One of those
Exactly.
classic moves that you can say, oh my God, I can't believe it, it's a
Send the
wrestling
kid,
show. yeah
send the kids to the pet store at the end, and the Buffalo Wild Wings that's on the
yeah
end caps or things like that, and you just hang out and watch.
the Red
So
Robin or whatever.
that's right.
Yeah, right.
So he appeared at the show, and then later he was pulled from upcoming GCW appearances. He was set to be at Highest in the Room taking on Matt Cardona. He was replaced by Effie on that show because Effie on his podcast made some, I say, disparaging comments about Tony Khan and so on, but it's kind of basically the century that he's a rich kid with daddy's money and daddy's giving this money just to go away or whatever. Tony Khan did not like that, and Starks was pulled. Brett Lauderdale, GCW, saying it certainly doesn't feel great. And again, this for years, this relationship between AEW and GCW is like, no one's really sure what it is. Some talents appear there. Obviously, Moxley was the big name for the longest time, but there's never been. I think Brett may have said he doesn't really have a relationship with Tony Khan and haven't really talked or anything like that. But a lot of talents go back and forth, so it's kind of odd, and this continued to be odd. And then Starks also was set to announce his House of Glory debut, set to take on Mike Santana. So that he's not pulled from those other shows, but. What a strange month for Ricky Starks, a strange month, this relationship, unforced errors to me with AEW, kind of how they've handled this whole thing. And, it's just making it bigger and bigger for when he eventually leaves and I assume signs with WWE and then makes this a bigger thing. And, we'll see what happens. He was asked about Ricky Starks at the media call the other day and said, you'll have to wait and see, or remains to be seen who's going to be on these shows or something like that. And some people thought, oh, maybe he could be peer on Wednesday. I it's possible. I mean, Danhausen returned. So I mean, I don't know. It's anything is possible, but it doesn't feel like it at this point. But what are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, I kind of oscillate on this story. Like, I know that there is, some real tension between, Ricky and Tony and Brett and GCW and AEW and all that's all real. And obviously, you had in the Danhausen aspect, and there obviously is, there was definitely some issues with Danhausen and AEW and Tony Khan, all that sort of stuff. The thing that my antenna's up a little bit though, because of Chris Jericho's appearance in GCW wearing an AEW shirt, had me thinking, okay, hold on a minute, because. I don't know that I would go through all this trouble to do these sort of work shoots angles or whatever, but it's possible that everybody, came together and said, all right, we got people talking, we're doing, there's a whole segment on this show all about these issues between these people. Is there a way that we can maybe make this work? Is there a way that we can maybe turn this into something that makes all of us money? And we can promote this show and promote that show and do this sort of thing. So my antenna's up a little bit because it's pro wrestling. And you can't put anything past pro wrestling. It does feel like there's a little too much real tension here for it to fully be a work. And I do wonder if it was like a shoot that turned into a work or a work that turned into a shoot that's now going to be a work. I don't know where it's going to be. I'm just going to kind of let it ride and see where it happens. But there's a lot of different paths and directions this thing has gone in, and I don't know. I really truly don't know. I think maybe we'll get a little bit more clarity after GCW does their Hammerstein show later in January, but. I wouldn't be shocked to see AEW wrestlers show up on that show or whatever, but I don't know. It's very strange. And I don't know that any of this is really good. Like, I don't know that I would really do this if I was AEW. Now GCW, whatever. Anything that gets their name out there is probably worth it in the position that they're in. So sure, if you guys want to, you know, we'll be more than happy to be in a bunch of headlines and get, you know, talked about on shows like this. But yeah, if I'm AEW, I don't know that I necessarily need this. You know, I don't know that necessarily, given what's happened over the last couple of years, you know, gesturing to all of AEW, I don't know if, you know, having disgruntled workers air out their frustrations publicly is exactly the way I would go if I was doing a story for AEW. But we'll see. I don't know. I oscillate on this on a daily basis as if this is a work or it's all real or yeah, it's a blend of both. I don't know.
I think I'd lean more in that direction if Effie appeared at Final Battle, but he didn't. And
true. Yeah.
And I guess we'll see. Well, we'll talk about the Hammerstein Ballroom here in a second. We'll save that for that because I have some thoughts. Let's go through the this first chunk of AEW and Ring of Honor news. Big Boom AJ, as I mentioned, said he is officially All Elite. Promises to be back in the ring, quote unquote, before you know it. So yeah, we're not. My hope for 2025, Rich, is that we see Big Boom AJ against Kenny Omega at a big major pay per view. I mean, why not, right? I mean, people talking about him and Okada and All In. Why can't it be Big Boom AJ and Kenny Omega? You know, who knows?
Yeah.
QT Marshall said he felt rubbed the wrong way by having a meeting with WWE earlier that year. I'm curious what that meant. Powerhouse Hobbs finally made his return in Manchester, New Hampshire. I was there for that. Teaming with Ricochet on an episode of Dynamite. Company revealed their pre-sale and on-sale information for All In Texas. Company announced they're making changes to the in-arena fan experience for the year ahead and to be kind of more interactive during commercial breaks and so on and so forth. I'm really fascinated to see how that is and if they are able to make the shows, you know, more fun. And you're not going to change things overnight, but we'll see what happens with that. As before mentioned, Okada and his wife welcomed the birth of their second child. The company moved a December edition of Collision in Columbus, Ohio, to the GalaxyCon convention versus the Columbus the arena where the Blue Jackets play. I believe that's where they're booked. So kind of a acknowledgement, subtle acknowledgement to run in front of smaller crowds and more lively crowds. And they certainly did that. That was ended up being a good move. Misko and other CML stars are set to return to the company for some matches in November. They announced that winter is coming, continuing, and is going to be happening in December as it always did. Danhausen, I mentioned him, still under AEW contract, and he aired some frustrations to Tony Khan about how his return in 2023 was handled. I believe this was a Fightful report. So, yeah, he eventually would return for Ring of Honor at Final Battle. So kind of see where that relationship goes. Buddy Matthews was announced for a return to Melbourne City Wrestling, one of his promotions back in the day. Paul White appeared as Captain Insano at the CMA Awards. The company promoted their first Dynamite simulcast date on Max, which is happening on January 1st, and they revealed the full list of participants for the Continental Classic Tournament, which just happened to wrap up last night. Thoughts about any of that?
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely a busy month in the, you know, finally getting on Max and that whole thing, and, you know, if it felt like something that we all knew was coming, but it was like, why do we not have a little bit more clarity on when this is happening? Why do we not know? And it makes sense. We'll just wait for the brand new year and then just say, hey, January 1st, you know, starting in 2025, we're simulcasting on Max and some content's going on Max and that's all going to work. So that, you know, that makes a lot of sense. And we talked about it already with, you know, WWE. And I think the way that AEW is approaching this is probably a good way to, you know, keep your normal TV, but now also have an aspect of it where, hey, if you want to watch this thing on Max, you could do that as well. So if you don't have cable, you can go on to Max and you can watch it. I think that is a really, really good, you know, it's good fan service. Like, you know, growth wise, I don't know that there's going to be a ton of new people checking in on AEW that would have never checked in on it ever before. But I do think for your current fan base, it makes it a little bit easier for them to check it out, particularly, you know, if they don't have cable and you know, with looking at the numbers, a lot fewer people have cable than, and that's that number is getting bigger by the month. So yeah, having an aspect of that being available to streaming is pretty good. And then yeah, the All In Texas thing, I think that's, you know, we've seen as of this recording, you know, sales have been, you know, relatively slow for the All In Texas, but you know, we're recording this just hours after World's End, and they made it I think pretty damn clear that Okada and Omega looks like it'll probably be at All In Texas. You know, they did the shot where they're both looking at each other with the All In Texas banner behind them, and I was like, yeah, that's subtle, and I suppose, and they're kind of telling you, hey, this thing's gonna happen. But they didn't really hit you over the head with it. And maybe it's just happened to be, hey, that banner was behind them. But then as Kenny Omega was like walking back, the camera literally panned to the All in Texas sign. I'm like, okay, all right. They're telling you, buy your damn tickets. You want to see Omega and Okada, buy your tickets right now to All in Texas is essentially what they're doing there. So we'll see. But that's a pretty major event. And I know that Dave Meltzer on your very site was talking about how, you know, AEW could possibly explore the idea of moving out of the baseball stadium, but I don't think they're going to do that. I don't think they can, because Arlington is big into doing that. I mean, this is a big thing with Arlington wanting this event. So I think you have to kind of keep doing what you can do to get, you know, more and more people in the building, and that'll come in time. I think with lower ticket prices, people know that you can wait and get discounts on AEW tickets. You can get 2-for-1 deals on AEW tickets, and we're months and months and months away. So let's, you know, start getting some matches, and you put something like Omega and Okada on the books, and maybe you make that a match. Maybe in January you announce, okay, look, at All in Texas, it's going to be Omega versus Okada. Like, I know you don't want to maybe show your hand booking wise for that many months out, but that's, you might need to do something like that to fill this big giant stadium and let people know that, hey, if you want to travel in for the show, this is what you're going to get. You know, this is the sort of show you're going to get here in Texas. But it's an ambitious thing, and I think it's going to be pretty cool. And I still do love, you know, big time stadium shows in wrestling. So curious how they get to where they are now. It's like 9,000 or something like that, or 8,000 or 9,000 or whatever, to the numbers they want to get, which is, you know, up in the multiple tens of thousands in that building.
Yeah, on the AEW Max front, AEW has done their part in promoting it. I don't think Max has done theirs. Not even close to what.
Yeah, not no way. Yeah, because I use Max a lot, and you would have no idea that this is coming at all.
Yeah, I've been underwhelmed by the Max. Again, when compared to Netflix and WWE, granted, it's a lot more money. They're making it a big deal, but that's the point, is they're making it into a big deal. Granted, you're having an entire fan base move platforms for how to watch, but still, on the Max, I don't see, like, there's been no, like, media event. I don't know how Max did not do a media event while they were all in New York, like, for Christmas week. I understand, you know, executives are out or anything like that, but then that's part of the game, right? That's entertainment. And when you have all those media people there, why not? I mean, WWE had Netflix had a launch party. They had two of them. And I don't understand why Max didn't do that. And again, granted, it's different, but don't treat it as different. Treat it as, this is a big thing. And especially if they do have a stake in the company in terms of financially, a small ownership stake, or whatever. I don't know. I think if you're spending all that money, and you should do everything you can to make sure people outside the wrestling bubble are aware of it. And as a Max viewer like you, I don't feel it.
No. And live sports, I mean, that's going to be, we're seeing it right now. Live sports is going to be the lifeblood of these streaming networks. And they're going to try to sell as many ads as possible on these different shows, because they're not going to make their money back just on Max subscriptions. They're going to make their money on selling ads. So you want as many people as possible watching these live sports, so you can sell these live sports ads to you know, high level clients and high level, you know, ad agencies and high level companies and that sort of stuff. So yeah, you would think that if you're like Netflix is an all out assault of, hey, come to Netflix, we have live sports. And the Max thing doesn't necessarily seem like they've, you know, and they do, I think they do a pretty poor job of promoting that on the NBA end as well, because a lot of games are available NBA wise on Max. And you really wouldn't know that unless you know, kind of engage with Max, you know, regularly, or engage with the NBA regularly. So they've done a weird job of promoting that they have their live sports, and that they are a live sport hub and a place to go for live sports. And it's just, yeah, it's strange. Cause like Hulu, when they did their live sports thing, and obviously the whole Hulu, Max, you know, Fox, it's all very confusing. But I mean, when Hulu did their live sports rollout, how many times did you see those commercials of athletes saying Hulu has live sports? Like, right. That was the entire commercial. It was essentially just a bunch of athletes wearing a bunch of gear, like, it tongue in cheek wise. It was a bunch of, you know, athletes wearing, you know, Hulu shirts, telling you and staring in the camera and saying, Hulu has live sports, Hulu has live sports, Hulu has live sports. Just so you knew at home, hey, Hulu has live sports. That's cool. Yeah, all right, I'm gonna go check out Hulu. And Max doesn't seem to really have that same drive to do that. And they should, because that's the future. That's what's moving forward. And Netflix knows it, and Netflix is on it. And that's why they're doing what they're doing.
Let's go the rest of the month in AEW Ring of Honor. It was, the first report came out that Grand Slam Australia was likely moving to a new venue. Spoiler alert, it did. Adam Copeland was cleared for physicality. Speedball Mike Bailey expected to sign with AEW when his TNA contract ends. So there's some question when it ended. So initially it came out, you know, November 1st, but then his contract actually runs to the end of the year and he's free and clear. So who knows? He could appear this week if that is true. MJF Returning the Indies for a December match. Speaking of Big Boom AJ in Boca Raton, Florida, the company filed for a Parade of Champions trademark, which I assume will be tied into All In at some form of fashion. The company confirmed they're signing a Bobby Lashley, and he revealed he has the option to pursue outside opportunities in AEW. Malakai Black had to shoot down speculation that he's retiring or he's leaving AEW, this following his match with Adam Cole in Manchester, New Hampshire on Dynamite, and kind of how he hugged him and showed respect afterwards and all that and so on. And yeah, so that happened. The Blade doing really well and recovered from his back surgery out most of the year. Coming filed for trademarks on Dynamite and 34th Street, Christmas Collision, so we'll see those, I'm sure, for the next couple of years. Coming announced new dates, the Hammerstein debut, which we just talked about, and also Revolution LA, not going to the Kia Forum, but heading to the Crypto.com Arena where the Lakers play, the former Staples Center, the big venue. So that's certainly a risk. And then Brett Lauderdale asked about the Hammerstein announcement shows, because again, the announcement of the shows, rather, you know, is about a month or so between those dates. And of course, their big January show, which is really, they're kind of treating as almost redemption for the last show they ran at the Hammerstein, or the big one where, you know, fans kind of left a little bit disappointed, a lot of new viewers, and didn't come away blown away. And he said that happening is not the greatest of circumstances for us. So we'll talk about that, I'm sure, in a minute. Soraya said she was taking a little break from AEW to focus on TV projects. It's always good when you sign a new one-year deal and then you just take a break, you know?
I want to get that job.
I know. Boy, I know.
My employer, where I say, hey, can I make more money? And they say, sure. And I go, all right, I'm leaving for a while to do other things. And they go, sure. Sounds great.
Yeah.
I go, thank you. Bye. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Marshall Von Erich revealed that he suffered a torn pec earlier in the year and it does keep him out of action. Ring of Honor said to be closing in on a TV deal. Nothing to report as of now. Final Battle planned for the Hammerstein as far as that three-event weekend AEW announced. Women's TV title match was the first announced for that show. And then the company revealed the Ring of Honor participants for the newly announced International Women's Cup. Thought about any of that?
Yeah, we'll go to the Hammerstein one, obviously, yeah. Now that we've finished out the shows. They had their little mini residency AEW did. And I understand where Brett Lauderdale is coming from as somebody who's, you know, booking a Hammerstein show. But, you know, I don't know. It's like, you know, it happens. You know, it's a major, it's a wrestling venue that has a lot of cachet. And I don't think AEW did it maliciously. I don't think AEW said, we're going to do Hammerstein just so GCW suffers greatly in their return to Hammerstein. Like, I mean, look at the ticket sales before AEW announced that they were going to Hammerstein. They weren't exactly, you know, great ticket sales. And the whole premise of the GCW show is that we kind of shit the bed last time, but give us a chance to right our wrongs with this show. So that's kind of the marketing, you know, direction they've gone with that show. So I mean, it's I get that it's not the greatest circumstances. I saw a lot of people, I think his quote isn't so bad because it's true. It's probably not the greatest circumstances for them. And then there was a couple other reactions from people, you know, particularly like people like Effie or whatever, who, you know, were losing their mind about, you know, AEW running it and how, you know, it's going to greatly hurt GCW and stuff. And I don't know necessarily if it's going to do that. I think, you know, it is what it is, but I did like the mini residency they had. Hammerstein's just a really, really cool building for wrestling. It's a place I would love to go see wrestling. I have to say the paint job, though, is deplorable. And I think everyone's got that same take that Hammerstein just isn't the same with the white gray walls or whatever the hell they have. It's just not quite the same. But it still looks like just a great place to watch wrestling. And the AEW shows that were run there were all a lot of fun. And it's a venue that I think they should all – I mean, every company should try to run Hammerstein regularly if they could, you know, maybe once a year or twice a year or whatever. AEW in particular should try to run it as much as possible because I think it's a really, really cool venue for wrestling. And it looks and feels differently than what you see in a lot of the other places. Like WWE, every WWE show looks like it's the same, you know, when it's in these, you know, major hockey basketball arenas, because every one of these major hockey basketball arenas all looks the same now. You go to any single one and it's all the same. It's, you know, here's the lower bowl. And then there's a LED ribbon, and then there's a press box area, you know, club level, and then there's a ribbon, and then there's the upper deck, and here's the big Jumbotron, and they all look the same. They're all exactly the same. So not many wrestling shows have the character anymore. And Hammerstein, man, there's no place that has more character among, you know, iconic wrestling venues than Hammerstein does. So I think more and more people should try to run it as much as possible. But I also think it was interesting, too, about the Revolution date in Los Angeles is that, and a lot of people were kind of questioning this, and maybe they don't know the dynamics of like buildings and ownerships and stuff like that. But Revolution 2025 taking place at the, you know, Crypto.com Arena, if it's still, I think it's going to still be called that at that time. I don't know. It feels like the Crypto.com Arena probably has the naming rights I feel like that's probably on their last legs because I don't think they're going to renew the crypto.com naming. So I'm just going to, I might call it the Staples Center in this conversation, but the same building we're talking about. Because that's the corporate name that I remember. It's always funny when people are like, no, it'll always be the Staples Center. And I'm like, that's also a corporate name. That's not necessarily like, you know, but whatever. That, you know, AEW is running there and people might say, well, what the heck? They used to run the forum and whatnot. Well, it's kind of to a point, you know, it's something that you brought up a little bit earlier, that WWE is running the first Raw on Netflix at the Intuit Dome, and that is owned by Steve Ballmer, the current Clippers owner, who also now owns the Forum. So you could see that WWE maybe kind of got into a deal there and said, all right, we'll run the Intuit Dome, and we're also, you know, we want some claims on the Forum too, or, you know, don't let these guys run the Forum or whatever it may be. So AEW now going to the Crypto.com arena, which it appears that WWE, which they used to historically run there, has now kind of let that one go in favor of the Intuit Dome. So it's always kind of funny to watch how the dynamics of these companies sort of maneuvering around buildings and who owns the buildings or whatever leads us to this situation where people are like, why are they not going to the Forum? They always used to run the Forum. And it's like, well, they might not be able to anymore. You know, WWE is running the building owned by the guy that owns the Forum. So that might not be in the cards. So but that should be a pretty fun show to see them at Crypto. But that's about it. There wasn't a ton of other stuff in there. That I guess Parade of Champions is kind of cool. You know, they go to Dallas and do a Parade of Champions world-class throwback show there, but we'll see.
Let's go through the month of Japan. I move this up usually from where I do it in these rundowns, because there's a lot of AEW news in here. I'm putting after AEW because Wrestle Dynasty, January 5th, taking shape. Kenny Omega, his in-ring return, taking on Gabe Kidd. Ricochet challenging Zack Sabre Jr. for the IWGP World Title. Jack Perry issued a challenge to Yota Tsuji. Claudio Castagnoli was revealed as John Moxley's emissary to take on Shota Umino at the show. The International Women's Cup, the very first one, a four-way announced Wrestle Dynasty featuring talents from AEW, Ring of Honor, CMLL, and Stardom. And everyone's going to have their qualifying matches different ways. And then the Young Bucks set a challenge for the IWGP tag team titles at that show. Of course, the Omega Gabe Kidd match set up by a backstage attack, an appearance that Omega made at Power Struggle, a show that also saw the return of El Desperado. Sonata joined the Bullet Club War Dogs, and Hanare and the Great Okan win the IWGP tag team titles. Company revealed Wrestle Kingdom's Wrestle Kingdom's main event, which was Zack Sabre Jr. versus Shota Umino, which sent some people questioning why that was happening. Didn't feel very big. We talk about that if we want. Shingo Takagi challenged Kenosuke Takeshita to a double title match on that show. So it'll be a lot of AEW influence over the January 4th and January 5th weekend at the Tokyo Dome. A strong women's title match between Mercedes Moné and Hazuki was announced for Strong Style Evolved. The Grizzled Young Veterans won the strong tag team titles at Fighting Spirit Unleashed. The company announced a full slate of teams for the World Tag League, which also kicked off in November. Shota Umino was set to miss the World Tag League event due to an ankle injury. So, yeah, it got announced some big matches and had to be set on sidelines for a little bit. The Ichiban Sweet Boys of Fujita and Robbie Eagles won the Super Junior Tag League. It's tag leagues all over the place in Japan for November. The company's historic crossover 2 happened with Stardom. Dave Boy Smith Jr. won the All-Japan Triple Crown Championship. Maiko Satomura announced that her retirement match date would happen in April 2025. Pro Wrestling Noah crowned their first ever GHC Women's Champion in Amare. And then New Japan revealed the full lineup for Strong Style Evolved. Thoughts about any of that?
Yeah, it's all kind of getting the big January shows all lined up. And a lot going on in Japan in the early part of the year, particularly with New Japan Pro Wrestling, obviously doing the Wrestle Kingdom and Wrestle Dynasty. And, you know, it falling on a weekend, too. A lot of people might not, you know, you may not have looked at your January calendar just yet. But, you know, for people listening, this is a really easy time to watch these shows because they're taking place on the weekends. Wrestle Kingdom 19, I think that it starts, I forget what time it starts, like Eastern. That's one that you're still going to have to, you know, wake up pretty early for or stay up pretty late for. But a lot of people that might not know this about Wrestle Dynasty, that show starts at like 10 p.m. Central or like 11. You know, it's I think it's 8 Pacific. So it's like a normal show. It's like a normal pay-per-view time for people to watch. So if you've ever wanted to kind of jump into the world of you know, Japanese wrestling in some form or fashion, Wrestle Dynasty is a great time to do that because it's going to be on at a relatively normal time. And both shows are going to be taking place on the weekend. So it's a little easier than, you know, what some of us do, which is, you know, I would often for these shows wake up at, you know, 2 a.m. or whatever and watch the shows. You know, we'll do a live recap show on the website, and then I'll go to work for the whole day. And that's not great. I don't advise doing that. You know, a lot of car naps on those days, a lot of, you know, go to the car for my lunch hour and take a nap there. But no, it's been it'll be a lot easier to watch it on the weekend here. And yeah, for other people, if you're into Japanese wrestling, like the first part of the month, it all kind of gets together here in November. They kind of put it all together and announce most of the matches and most of the things going on. But there's a ton of stuff going on in Japan. You mentioned Davey Boy Smith Jr., which that might be a name that a lot of people are like, whoa, haven't heard that name in a while. And yeah, he's the Triple Crown champion, and he's, you know, defending that title on a New Year's show against one half of the best tag team in the world this year, the Saito brothers. He's going to be facing again Jun Saito. So if you haven't checked that out, and Pro Wrestling Noah's got a lot of really cool stuff going on too. They're doing their New Year's show, and obviously, like you said here, they, you know, crowned their first ever GHC Women's Champion. So a lot of really cool stuff going on in Japan at you know, it all kind of taking shape here in November. But yeah, they're going to be, it's going to be a lot of fun to see these shows. Wrestle Dynasty is not quite, it's not a forbidden door level, you know, type of show where I think a lot of American audiences might have thought, oh, we're going to get like that sort of level of show here in Japan. It's not quite there, but it is still an opportunity to see Kenny Omega make his return to the ring. And I think that's pretty awesome. And, you know, the Young Bucks, will be in challenger for the IWGP tag team titles. That'll be pretty cool. But yeah, I don't know. I think Wrestle Kingdom looks a little stronger than Wrestle Dynasty, but I think both shows are going to be worth checking out, particularly, you know, falling on a weekend.
Yeah. I was glad Omega made his AEW return at World's End. I thought if his first on-screen appearance was going to be at New Japan, I didn't love that, but I'm glad that he at least he's part of the founding of AEW. He's still an EVP. He's still one of their biggest stars. That's your main thing. And I was, for me, I was just glad that it made, to me, if he did not make any AEW appearances before the Wrestle Dynasty show, I would have been that bummed out. I call it promotional malpractice. So I'm glad that happened. That, again, that's just me. And I'm not a huge like New Japan watcher. Probably that's part of it. But I think for the AEW audience, it's like this is his home to me anyway.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. He's a big part of the heart and soul of AEW. So yeah, he should have been on screen at some point before. So that all got rectified and all the hand-wringing about is I think Ben, like, is it okay that he makes his in-ring debut in Japan? Yeah, I have no problem with that. But yeah, he needed to appear on an AEW show or pay-per-view before he appeared here. And that did get rectified here at World's End. So that's good to know.
All right, we'll go through the month of TNA. Not a lot here. The company officially signed a former WWE prospect, Lee Ying Lee. Hardy's re-signed with the company. Josh Alexander said he was no longer taking independent dates and appears that his time with TNA possibly could come to an end as he's going to kick the tires in free agency again. Kind of a potentially tough market. I don't know where he fits. He's a great talent, but you know, we can talk more about that in a second. Vikingo avoided major injury and gave a timetable of his in-ring return. Of course, I include this here because he got injured at the post-Bound for Glory TV taping on the same night that Chris Bay unfortunately got a much more serious injury, but Vikingo, a tough year for him. Chris Bay there was a little bit of an update. The rehab process began. Of course, we still don't know what the exact injury is. We just, at this point, can assume it's very, very bad. And, you know, just kind of hope for the best for him, but we still don't know a lot. TNA crowned a new X Division champion, Moose, of all people, picking up a win over Speedball Mike Bailey, and I believe what Bailey's final impact match. And the title may be changing names completely come January Genesis. We'll have to see. Turning point happened at WrestleCade in North Carolina. Matt Riddle made a debut as Trey Miguel had to miss the show. And Matt Riddle early in the year had been potentially talked about TNA, said he had some talks, but essentially just bring him for a one shot. And that was it. And the company held a fan poll to decide a location for a quote unquote major 2025 event, either New York or Los Angeles. And they ended up just doing both New York and Los Angeles, big venues too. Very, very surprised about that. But I feel like they got something up their sleeve with it. I don't know if it's a revamping of the NXT relationship or something that they're running these again, the UBS arena. They have to have something in their back pocket. I can't just imagine like, let's just kick the tires on a 10,000 seat building all of a sudden. So I don't know. Thoughts about any of that?
No, no, I definitely agree with you about the big buildings. I'm a little shocked by those. It's kind of like, whoa, okay. I mean, they had a great year. They had a great year at the box office. They did good numbers all across the country in various different places in Canada as well. I mean, they had a very, very good year at the box office in TNA. And I think some of that is the NXT deal, of course. Some of that is Joe Hendry getting, you know, a publicity and getting bigger and getting eyeballs. I think a big portion of that too is the Hardys. I mean, the Hardys just always draw with TNA. That's like the place that it's so weird that like when the Hardys eventually retire, a lot of their career, a huge chunk of their career is going to be in TNA. And like a lot of the really successful part of their career is going to be in TNA. I mean, Jeff obviously had his little bits and pieces here in WWE. And there was brief periods where he was like a draw in WWE and was a big deal in WWE. Matt, much less so. But man, Jeff in TNA and Matt in TNA, like those guys, it's so weird that when their careers do, you know, end at some point, apparently it's not going to be in 2025 because they've re-signed with TNA. When their careers end, like we have to have a real discussion about like, is like TNA what they should be most synonymous with? And that's going to be a very weird conversation for people to have. But I don't know if they're just thinking that they could still sort of rely on the Hardys and still sort of rely on the NXT deal. But like you said, there feels like there's a missing piece here. There feels like there's something else that needs to be there to run these buildings. And there must be some sort of intel that they have that tells them we can run these buildings. We could sell these things out. Cause while they've done well at the box office, we're talking about buildings that fit 2,000 people, 3,000 people, 4,000 people. Yeah. And they can do that. And they've been able to do those, but now we're taking a big leap up there to these 10,000 plus seat buildings. And that I'm very curious how that all plays out, but they had a good year. I mean, they definitely had a good year. And I think November kind of solidified that a little bit with, you know, re-signing the Hardys, who I think have been a big, big part of their company. And yeah, and it's been a very interesting year in TNA. And like you said, with Josh Alexander no longer taking indie dates, I love Josh. I think he's one of the most underrated wrestlers in the world, but I also don't know that he necessarily fits in any of the other major companies. Like, could he be in AEW? Yeah, no problem. Yeah, can you fit Josh Alexander in AEW? You absolutely can, but where and how and to what level, I don't know. And WWE, they've never seemed that interested in him. You know, all these different times that he's been in, I guess AEW would be the same, but they've never seemed that interested in Josh Alexander. And I don't know if, you know, something has changed in the last year, or, you know, maybe he's just making himself more available to TNA. I don't know what it is, but I definitely was very notable about that because he was a guy who had just started popping back up in Chicago and doing, you know, he had just, yeah, I go to AEW shows a lot in Chicago, and he had just recently returned to the company and they had big plans for him and they were going to put him in main event angles. And then, you know, a week or two later, he makes the announcement, I'm no longer taking independent dates. I'm kind of just, you know, going to do, you know, I'm finishing up my independent run and then I'll be, you know, doing whatever my next chapter is. So it felt like a very last minute thing that he decided I'm no longer taking independent dates. And I don't know what the intel that he got as well. So we're kind of left with more questions than answers about TNA, you know, from the month of November and moving forward into 2025. But there's ambition for sure in that company. And they're feeling themselves for the first time that they've felt in a very long time of having confidence and saying, okay, maybe we can get this thing. And I guess they did that a little bit in 2024 as well, saying, hey, we're going to run these bigger buildings. We're going to run, you know, major, and it worked out very well. And now 2025, they're going to take another leap up and we'll see how that goes. But I have the same idea that you have, is like, there's some question mark thing that I'm missing that's leading us from here to 10,000 seat buildings in major markets like New York and Los Angeles.
Yeah. Interesting stuff. Let's go to the month of NXT. Shawn Michaels welcomed Noah Talent, Yoshiki, and Amura to the company. That was kind of just a random out of nowhere thing that happened. The company revealed the date and location for Deadline. Devon Dudley was among the surprise appearances at the company show at the former ECW arena. The company beat Dynamite in a head-to-head rings battle. You remember that was the ECW show against, was it Title Tuesday for Dynamite?
Tuesday, I believe, yes. I believe it was Title Tuesday.
Which actually would have taken place in October. I don't know why I have it here, but anyway. The company revealed that they would be heading back to Lowell, Massachusetts, the Lowell Auditorium. In, again, lovely Lowell, Massachusetts, home of actually some very interesting NXT results in the past, including one that was untelevised I was there for when Samoa Joe defeated Finn Balor for the NXT title. Again, non-televised show. It was a pretty big story at the time. And, of course, you know, Shawn Michaels lost his smile there and all that stuff, which they talked about. So, yeah, Lowell, Massachusetts. I would not place that vacation anytime soon, put it that
way.
No, I can't say so. Yeah,
the Lowell Auditorium is definitely a strange venue too, because like I did a series not that long ago on our Patreon where I was going through the Brett versus Owen feud from 1994, and they had a bunch of episodes taped in the Lowell auditorium, but they had like no lighting. It like looks like a dungeon. And I wrote in my notes, I'm like, what the hell venue is this? Like, this is the worst venue I've ever seen. And then I looked it up and I was like, oh, it's Lowell. They've had a lot of shows here. Why? But for some reason, these shows, they tape these like random August 1994 episodes of Raw in this building, and it's just so dark. It's like the darkest low quality building you've ever seen in your life, and it's just a very strange place to run shows. But I guess it's got some character. But okay, I will scratch that off my list of vacation destinations. Lowell, Mass is off, you know. I'll tell you, Australia, Japan, you know, I'm trying to get to Glacier National Park at some point, and now I will scratch Lowell, Mass off my list. So
have you ever been to Kankakee, Illinois?
I have.
You have. I've heard at one point that was one of those dangerous cities in the United States.
I mean, it's not great.
This is also like 10 plus. This is also like more than a decade ago. Someone mentioned it was like
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if Kankakee's that bad, but it's okay. Not. I mean, I would not vacation in Kankakee for sure. I would definitely avoid, much like you're recommending me avoid Lowell, Mass. I would also avoid Kankakee.
WWE NXT wrestlers appeared on an episode of Trivial Pursuit. I did not realize that was a TV show, but sure, why not? The company confirmed the signing of Lance Noi and also two former NFL players. So potential for more bloodline stuff to continue. One of the last shows I talked about how I'd be fine if they just, instead of just bring everyone up to the main roster for more bloodline stuff, just expand the brand, so to speak, in NXT, and have guys when they're ready come up, not just come up just because they happen to be part of the lineage, but we'll see what happens there. Gigi Dolin returned from an ACL injury at a NXT house show and then appeared on TV shortly thereafter. X-Pac and Eric Bischoff were set to appear on an episode of NXT. Yes, X-Pac and Eric Bischoff. Iron Survivor Challenge set to return, so they started doing qualifying matches there. And then Ridge Holland earned an NXT title match for the aforementioned Deadline. And because of that win, Chase U was forced to disband. Thoughts about any of that?
Yeah, the thing that's hilarious about people like X-Pac and Eric Bischoff and stuff showing up on NXT TV and WWE TV is we're stuck in this continual nostalgia loop with the 90s and the Attitude Era in wrestling, where we've never escaped that. These guys just keep coming back and keep coming back. And when you think about how long ago the Attitude Era was, and I think of how young I was when these men were in their quote unquote primes, it's unbelievable. And nothing like that would have ever happened in wrestling history before. Like Pedro Morales wasn't going to come out on an episode of like Attitude Era Raw, you know what I mean? Cause that's the comp there. You got to go 26 years ago was 1998. Like the peak of those, like, can you imagine, you know, Stone Cold Steve Austin cutting a promo on Raw, you know, eviscerating Mr. McMahon. And then Pedro Morales comes down to be like, hold on a sec, Stone Cold Steve Austin, I have a thought about this. Like it would never happen. You know, when they would bring these guys back, you know, occasionally it was like, look at this old dude. This guy is so freaking old. You know, he's a legend of the past, but he's, you know, you'd have, you know, your Sergeant Slaughters that would appear occasionally. And you know, obviously you have Bob Backlund coming back in 1994. But the whole idea is like, my God, look how old these men are. They're from a bygone era. And it's like we're stuck in this nostalgia loop with the Attitude Era, where these guys can come out and be on these shows. And it's just like, oh, yeah, these guys were, you know, they revolutionized wrestling. And it was like 30 years ago. It's so long ago. There's how many people are watching the show that were not even alive when these guys were doing their thing? Like, you know, I have a buddy who coaches high school basketball. And I went and played on practice with them a couple weeks ago, just because he was like, come on to the, you know, they need to face like adults, you know, they need to face guys with a little bit of girth and power or whatever. So I want, you know, you to go out there. And I'm talking to one of the kids and I was like, when were you born? Because he coaches like sophomores. And he told me he was born in like 2010. And I just turned to dust. You know what I mean? I was like, what? Like, you were born in 2010? Like, 20, you know, one of the other kids like, oh, you know, I'm a little older. I was born in 2008. I'm like, what is happening here? These guys. And like, you have to think about that. Like, these guys, their prime, Eric Bischoff's prime on TV wrestling was like 97, 98. I mean, that was so long ago. And they still get trotted out here. And it's just, you would never have seen this in any other era of wrestling. But for some reason, we're just continually stuck in a nostalgia loop with the Attitude Era. And ECW is the same way, too. You're talking about, you know, going back to the ECW arena and Devon Dudley. I mean, ECW went out of business in 2001. You know what I mean? Like, went out of business so long ago. And it's just, we're stuck in this endless loop where we could just never get out of it and never feel like we can move on and progress in wrestling nostalgia. We're just completely stuck in the mud.
Yeah. Garrett Kidney was on this the show as part of the series, and he had talked about that before, how we're just, there's more than just the Attitude Era. You know, there's nothing more to talk about. There's just, it's been talked to death, the Monday Night Wars, but like, everything is just, there was more than just that era of wrestling. But yeah, it's like they want to go skip past the dark period when wrestling wasn't that great afterwards, or the 20-year Vince run that just drove so many people away. But yeah, it's everyone's just stuck. They're stuck in that loop and they can't get out of it. And they don't want to go. The Pedro Morales comp. That's a
That's the
really
best
good one.
way,
Oh
like
my
when you
God.
have to think, and I do that all the time to people, of like, think about what would happen in any other era if a man whose peak was 30 years ago showed up on the show and appeared in like in earnest on the show too, like and not just a, hey, here's an old guy at the desk, let him wave, like, because they would do that occasionally. They would have guys show up and wave or whatever, but it was like, here's classy Freddie Bassey, like, he's old. Look at him, he was a legend back in the day. But like, never earnestly on the show, but like, edited era people are still earnestly on the shows and will beat up people and do their moves on people and do those sort of things. And it's like, it's unfathomable that would ever happen in any other era. And the best way to do it is, like I said, yeah, with the Pedro Morales comp. Like, think of anybody from that era of the WWWF, showing up to interrupt a Stone Cold Steve Austin or the Rock promo, and then it makes a little bit more. You're like, oh wow, that is a long time ago. That it's unfathomable that would ever occur in 1998, Raw, but it doesn't seem very out of the ordinary to happen on 2024 programming.
Let's round the bend with the junk drawer, all the different headlines that didn't fit in any of the sections above. Bloodsport 12 happened. Charlie Dempsey competing his show, along with ECW or ECW. Boy, now you got me thinking about ECW. I can't get out of that era.
See?
AEW's Marina Shafir, NXT's Karen Petrovic, Miles Bourne, and then Josh Barnett taking on MVP on the show. It's always an interesting mix of talent there. Shelton Benjamin set to face Mike Bailey at a at the WrestleCade Super Show. Again, a match that, a year ago, you're like, no way, anything is possible. In 2024, Freddie Prinze Jr., speaking of, gave an update on his plans to start a wrestling promotion. Just TLDRs that you try to get some interest. There is some possibly reality show component. We'll see if this ever happens. The former Tegan Knox was announced for her first post WWE indie dates, and then was no longer set for those indie dates. Apparently, I guess this was due to the 9-day no compete, which at this point just like, can you just let her wrestle? Who cares?
Right.
Vikingo was pulled from his Progress Wrestling debut and also pulled from AAA Guerra de Titans. ECW Legends were set for the Hammerstein Ballroom show, as they tend to kind of try to build that up. And again, let's go back to the past, pulling Masato Tanaka and some of these other people out of mothballs, so to speak. Deonna Purrazzo is set to make her CMLL debut in December. MLW and essentially head of production in some sense. David Marquez split. Dave had a big thing about that in on the website. CMLL revealed the International Women's Cup qualifiers from their promotion. Marco Stunt announced his retirement from pro wrestling after making that surprise return against Jack Perry. Mandy Rose and Tino Sabatelli got married. Charlie Dempsey set to wrestle Timothy Thatcher at an indie event. Mustafa Ali set to open the Chicago Wrestling Center in January 2025. I'm sure you'll be getting your in-ring training at some point
Oh yeah, I'd love to run. I ran the ropes once or twice and said, "Ow, that hurts. I'm good. I'm going to go back to talking about it." You know what's a lot easier? Sitting in a chair and talking about it and telling you guys, "You suck at wrestling. You're no good," because it hurts. It hurts a lot. So, but it's always fun to kind of bounce around the ring a couple times. But yeah, I hit the ropes like twice, and I was like, "Yeah, I think I'm good. This hurts."
Nikki Garcia and her husband finally agreed to a divorce settlement, ending that months-long story. Claudio Castagnoli, Toni Storm, Pac, and Red Velvet were announced for December 13th CMLL event. Kevin Nash, speaking of the Attitude Era, revealing he needed minimally invasive shoulder surgery. And then WWE's Ludwig Kaiser made a surprise appearance at a WXW event. Thoughts about any of that?
Yeah, so the Freddie Prinze Jr. thing, it feels like we've been doing this for like 2 years, right? Like, when did he first say that I'm opening up a wrestling promotion? It feels like years ago, and I completely forgot. I always forget about it, and then it like pops back up in the news cycle for a little bit, and I'm like, oh yeah, and then it goes away again, and then it pops up in the news cycle again. We've been on the same track for what feels like years now for it. So I have no expectations that the Freddie Prinze projects is ever going to happen. And I did circle the MLW Dave Marquez split, because I was actually at that show live, and I should have noticed this, that I was doing media for that show, and I got there really early, and I saw Dave Marquez and a bunch of other guys working on some stuff, and so he's very public. I saw him around the building at the beginning of the show, and then the show didn't stream on YouTube. I don't know if you know the whole kind of story about that, but MLW was doing a live show, a lucha show in Chicago, in a very heavily Mexican population area of the city. So it was sold out. It was a big building. They had a bunch of guys, a bunch of top guys from CMLL there, a big time show. And they were going to stream it on YouTube, like MLW usually does. They'll stream their shows live on YouTube. And for whatever reason, this show just didn't stream. It just could not get off the ground. And it was a kind of a disaster from that aspect of they did a really good job of building the show up and getting people excited about it. And then it just never went. It just never even began. And, you know, later in the night, I learned that, you know, Dave Marquez and MLW basically split during the show, however that was. And I should have noticed because after the show, I didn't see Dave Marquez at all. I didn't hear from him at all. And everybody that I talked to in MLW was very coy about what had happened and why the things, you know, weren't working. So I know that, your website had a little bit of report about that and the split. But production issues in wrestling have long, you know, especially streaming, it wrestling streaming. We're almost there. We're almost there, but we still have these little bits and parts that don't quite work all the time. But that was a very interesting story to kind of follow in real time in the building where, you know, I should have been more aware of it when, you know, the guy who was the head of production was all over the building at the beginning of the show was somehow nowhere to be seen after the show. I should have put two and two together on that one after the split. But, you know, that was definitely an interesting story. And yeah, I definitely recommend people go check out the report. I think that was in one of Dave's daily updates, right, that he wrote about.
It was a subscriber exclusive that he did.
Yes,
I think he provided the update that David Marquez had reached out to him and kind of conflicted or contradicted some of the stuff that was reported and so on and so forth. So I don't know. As always, the truth is somewhere in the middle.
It's wrestling. So yeah, the truth is never never black and never white. Always lots of shades of gray. But yeah, that was definitely a very interesting story there. And then, not much else that really stood out to me in that month. I mean, obviously great for Nikki Garcia to get that divorce settlement, because that was a horrific story and the stuff that was happening with her. So glad to hear that. Hopefully she has some clarity and hopefully can move forward in her life after a pretty devastating story.
The Frey Prinze Jr. Promotion's first announced in May 2022.
Okay, so it has been 2 years. Yeah, all right. And we're not quite 2 years yet, but hey, any day now. What was the new update about it? It was just like, hey, I'm maybe still doing this.
So actually more than 2 years, because yes, May 2022. So this May it'll be 3 years.
Right. Yeah.
So he had revealed plan to start a wrestling promotion in the next 18 months. That was out of time. Remember, there was talk there was talk about like Bray Wyatt being part of it, if you remember that. And that whole thing changed. So yeah, the update was let's see, the TLDR. So he had several meetings regarding the project, naming WBD and Vice TV as two of the places he met with. WBD said it was the worst meeting I had out of all of them. They wanted me to just do a reality show. They knew nothing about wrestling and didn't seem to care about wrestling for all, which is interesting considering they have AEW. Not a good meeting. He said, I must have failed the point of the pitch because they weren't interested. He pitched a Vice. They wanted the show bad. They're going into some business restructuring. And of course, the whole Vice Sports thing, I think, was launched in December, announced. So disappointed there. So he met with another service, a new company. He didn't say what it was. Wants to talk about wrestling. They're not interested in the documentary aspect. So he's looking to do a show where the first six episodes would be a documentary about him trying to put the new promotion together. And then the next two episodes would be 2-hour specials from the promotion. And then this company doesn't care about the documentary. They just want pro wrestling. And so, you know, he's trying to be optimistic and so on, but yeah, it's I don't know. There's another idea. The stream company came up with the idea. This project moved forward with Prince partnering with an existing independent promotion. They have identified the promotion they want to work with and had a really good meeting with them. So I don't know. He's trying. I don't know. Again, I don't know why. And again, we probably talked to those before. I know I have. What makes it different? There's so much wrestling as there is now. We're getting more WWE every week. AEW is a little bit less, but you know, like there's just, you mentioned MLW. There is so much. So why should the wrestling fan, even the hardcores whose eyeballs are probably bleeding with just how much stuff they have to take in to keep up in a given week, you know, what else do they need? How is it going to be different in a way that people are like, this is worth checking out? And now with, you know, so many companies other than WWE doing non-exclusive contracts, you can see the same talents everywhere in the matches you never thought would happen. You'll see it at like a WrestleCade, as I just mentioned, or, you know, all these different random places. There's there's not a lot left to dream about in terms of like matches you've never seen before. So if you're going to do this promotion, then what's the point? Why is it different? What hole is it filling? If you're saying, I just want to do a wrestling brochure because I always want to do one, best of luck to you, because so many people have done that, and we're at that point now where we don't need another one of those. We just don't.
Yeah, there's a lot of wrestling. We're very well served in the wrestling world, and like you said too, it with the additional hours coming this year, with SmackDown moving to 3 hours, Raw going back to 3 hours. I mean, Dynamite, they tested it out a lot last year. You know, they tested out that third hour a couple times, and I would not be surprised if that happens more regularly moving forward, because why not? You know, if it gets good enough ratings and the network says, hey, we'd like, to do another hour, you're kind of at the whim of the network. So if the network says, hey, give us another hour, you can't say no. No, we're not going to do that because they're paying most of the bills. So yeah, I think we're definitely at a and like you said, everything, we have access to everything too. So another wrestling company, if you're going to do it, there has to be some purpose and some reason for it. And I forget what month it was in the year. I'm sure you covered it already, but Scott D'Amore did the Maple Leaf Wrestling, which was a lot of fun. I watched both those shows and it was fun, but when it was done, I was just like, I don't think we need this. This is just basically the same thing I'm getting in TNA, or the same thing I'm getting in a bunch of other different places. Like, more power to him to having a high production value, fun wrestling show with a lot of really good talent. But what is this doing in the marketplace that I can't get elsewhere? And I think a lot of people have to look in the mirror and say, what can we do to stand out in this increasingly bloated content market here? What can we do to make people, pay attention to us that are not being already served with hundreds of hours of first run, wrestling on their TV or on their streaming services every single month? Like, what can we do to get those eyeballs? And I think, yeah, without, I guess, doing the reality show and building up that way is one way. But yeah, I'm with you that it's like, I don't know that we need another wrestling promotion right now.
Definitely not. Well, good. Well, now we have the month of November wrapped up. And before I let you go, of course, tell people where they can read some of your work, hear some of your work for Voice of Wrestling. I know you're doing a lot these days, as always. So the floor is yours. Let them know.
Great. Yeah. Thank you so much for having me on here. I always appreciate this, and I love doing these shows, and I look forward to hopefully getting invited back next year to do this.
Yes.
But yeah, most of my stuff is available at voicesofwrestling.com. I co-host the flagship podcast there at voicesofwrestling.com every Thursday night. Most Thursday nights, we go live and do a show there. A lot of our bonus content is available at Patreon as well. Flagshippatreon.com or patreon.com/voicesofwrestling. Tons of additional stuff there. We do instant reaction shows after every major wrestling event. We just did one after World's End a couple of hours ago, and we'll be doing for both Wrestle Kingdom and Wrestle Dynasty. We're planning on doing one for the Raw after Netflix, so there'll be a ton of stuff there going live almost immediately after all those shows. So if you want sort of instant reactions, that's what Instant Reaction Live is there for. But plenty of other stuff too there. We do written columns, we do retro content as well. One of the things that I'm doing this year, and it's a very ambitious thing here I'm trying to do in 2025 on that Patreon, is a brand new series called Tour of the Territories, which is I'm going to take a year in territory wrestling. So I decided to pick 1983 because we have the most available footage of 1983, and essentially put all the major promotions that I have, weekly television for, into a randomizer, and every single week we're going to bounce around to a different territory and talk about what's going on in that territory at the time, review the wrestling show from that day, talk about the news, of the time. And I have a couple episodes already recorded and in the can, and I think it's a lot of fun. And one thing we always hear from people is they want to watch project. It's hard to just, wake up one day and say, I'm just going to watch all 1983 territory wrestling or whatever. It's hard to do that, but with this project, it might be a little bit easier, as I'm watching along with you and we're all watching together, reviewing the same shows and talking about the same shows. So I'm really looking forward to that, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun to look back at a very transformative era in pro wrestling as well. So going to 1983, not the Attitude Era, like you said, I'm finding a different era to go to, but I'm really excited about Tour of the Territories. I think that'll be a blast to do, but that's going to all be available over at flagshippatreon.com. And we have two price tiers. We have a $5 tier, which gets you all of our bonus audio, and then a $10 tier, which gives you written columns, the live shows, and all the bonus audios as well. And Josh, if I can give one more, and this might actually be relevant to a lot of people listening to this, Match of the Year season is coming up, and Voice of Wrestling, since 2013, we have done a Match of the Year poll, a fan voted, or I guess media voted, I should say, Match of the Year poll that we do every single year, and we always break records every single year with new voters. And this is a good time to mention that if you want to participate in Match of the Year this year, I have a link set up at voicesofwrestling.com/ MOTY request. So voiceswrestling.com/MOTY request. And you can request a ballot for the 2024 Voices of Wrestling Match of the Year. Now, again, this is a media only poll. So you have to participate on a website, write, do a podcast, do a YouTube thing, whatever it may be. We don't really care. We just want it to be media only because it's just a little more fun than doing it just fan only. So yeah. We decided to do media only there. But yeah, if you are listening and want to participate in that, that is the time to do it. If you voted last year, you're good to go. If you listen to this and you have voted previously, you're good to go. You'll get an email. But if you've never participated before, we always want to break records. And it's a lot of fun. And it's, you know, you just have to rank your top 10 matches of the year. And at the end of the year, we do a giant countdown of all these matches and 300, 400 plus matches that get voted on by people from all across the world, countries all over the place. We always break records for the amount of countries, the amount of cities or whatever. And we want to do that again. So voiceswrestling.com/MOTY request if you want to request a ballot for the 2024 Voice Wrestling Match of the Year.
Excellent stuff. Well, Rich, I always appreciate you being part of this series. I'm glad we're able to make it happen as we near the end here. But yeah, this has been great getting to know you over the years and look forward to doing more in the years ahead. Rich Kraich, Voice of Wrestling. Thanks so much.
Thank you.